Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Hello, cool people, and welcome to Strange Studies of Strange Stories. I'm Chris Lackey.
And I'm Chad Pfeiffer. And not only that, I'm also excited.
Woo!
Because this is the feedback show where we read and enjoy the comments of said cool people. Thank you for joining us.
December was all about fairy tales, the soldier, the devils, the beauties, and the beasts.
And we're going to start with Study 150, The Soldier and Death.
Greg Spiridonov writes, wait, the soldier whistled really well? Could still be around? Has anybody triple checked up on Andrew Lehman's origin story? I haven't.
No, he could be the immortal soldier.
Oh, wow. Wolfmungus writes, fun story, but I'm a bit confused about something. What was the point of the magic playing cards? Couldn't he have just walked in and yelled for the devils to jump in his sack first and foremost?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he could have.
He could have. I guess he wanted to get to know him first, is what I thought.
Yeah. You know? Well, it would be fun to play cards with devils and trick them. So maybe he just did it for fun.
I think so. And I think most of all, it's the James Bond rule that if you've got special gadgets, mm-hmm. you have to use them.
Yeah, true.
They're never like, Bond, this car shoots missiles and then that's just irrelevant. You never see it in the movie. Yes. Everything they say that his gadget can do, you have to see it happen.
That's right.
It's a Ghost writes, regarding the souls that the soldier takes from hell to heaven, I figured they were maybe in hell because the devil tricked them. They sold their soul to the devil or something like that. The devil had gotten to them and acquired their souls first. So when the soldier brought them to heaven, he figured God would be appreciative.
Oh, all right.
That's a good theory.
Sanjay Matthew writes, Orthodox Christianity doesn't do purgatory. That's a pretty specifically Roman Catholic thing. So presumably, the bringing souls to heaven bit is just good old folk religion.
I still don't understand what it was about, but I didn't really mind that much.
Nah, I didn't mind.
Gideon Falcon writes, as to Jesus wearing disguises, there's actually a story in the Bible along those lines. After the resurrection and such, two disciples are walking to the town of Emmaus, talking about recent events and the rumors of Jesus being seen alive. Some random guy joins up, starts asking about the subject, and they're like, what, do you live under a rock? Then upon reaching a stop after a quick meal, the stranger stands up and, it's Jesus! And he tells them to spread the word, then vanishes. The disciples then remark that in hindsight, they could feel that it was Jesus from the way our hearts burned within us. There is also the religious song, A Poor Wayfaring Man of Grief, based on the Good Samaritan story, where the singer encounters a beggar in various needy circumstances, helps them out, feels good about it, and in the last verse, the beggar turns out to have been Jesus, at least metaphorically.
Mm.
Fear not, thou didst them unto me. The moral being that as God loves everyone, helping any random beggar is technically helping Jesus.
Yes, that is a big tenet of Christianity. Like, I think he says that when you help that person, you're helping me. And that story before, he's not in disguise, though. I want to clarify that. They just don't recognize him. There's some kind of weird mental fugue that goes on when Jesus joins up with them. So he's not like wearing a beggar disguise and they're not like, haha, I tricked you. You know, there's no reveal at any point.
Well, how would you know what Jesus looks like in that setting anyway? I mean, there's no, yeah. You know. Velvet Jesus is yet. There's no, I mean, people are like, I saw Jesus. He's got a beard and he wears sandals. Yeah, that's everybody.
There was somebody, it's like, there's a thing, I don't know even know if it's true, but it was where they took Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi and like swapped out their mom's picture of Jesus with that. And she didn't notice for months. That was the...
Right, exactly.
Perfect.
Jesus or Obi-Wan, you wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know.
In the Bible?
Exactly.
A lot of people are confused about who's Ben Kenobi, who's Jesus. All that's in the Bible.
Our old pal Brendan Gardner writes, I think the reference being called to mind for the original audience would be from Matthew, where Jesus says, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. Clothed me when I was naked, etc. Yes, that's what I was talking about. Brendan goes on to say, the people hearing him ask, when did we do this for you? He says, when you do this for the least of my people, you do it for me. I don't think believing Christians really take this warning as an undercover boss situation. Like the way it plays out in the story here, but it's more as I'm watching you, be nice to the least well off, and you'll have your reward later.
Yeah. It just brings me back to that idea from Vonnegut in Slaughterhouse-Five. Mm-hmm. Even with that, you're still saying, I got to be nice to these people because I'm being watched and it might make the powerful person mad. You know, yeah. I liked the Kilgore Trout idea of Jesus really was a nobody and God adopted him. I still think is a stronger story. That was a good point.
Yeah.
Doc Singles writes, also, what's up with Saint / Jesus enabling cheaters with magic cards?
Oh, yeah.
And that's true. Also, in that same, in Matthew, Jesus does say hey, let's have a fair game. I remember. I think that's a quote. Doc Singles continues, I loved Rachel's devil voice. I did too. It was awesome.
I told her about Doc's comment, and she goes, I just did the voice like the Jim Henson thing. I just did that voice. And I go, oh, okay. And I go, well, ain't broke, don't fix it. Mary Kate Jenkins writes, I read The Mouse, the Bird, and the Sausage to my 3.5-year-old a few months ago, thinking it would be a cute little tale to tell. I have a big book of Grimm, and I've read enough to know that sometimes it gets way too weird, but I mistakenly thought this one should be okay. The bird and the mouse, he couldn't have cared less about. But when the sausage gets eaten by the dog, he burst into tears and angrily cried, Mama, I don't ever want you to tell me that story again.
Aww.
He still brings it up every once in a while.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of Grimm stories that probably would have that effect on a child.
Man, sometimes kids, they don't forgive or forget. You know, like sometimes they'll, hey, you remember that time that you forgot to pick me up from the, oh, gee, Emily, that was 5 years ago. Why are you so, hold on to that? And I was 5 minutes late. I didn't forget to pick, you know, kids.
Yeah, sure. Mookiebus writes, I agree that practical effects, which we were talking about on that episode, even if they don't necessarily look as good as CGI, still feel just better to see. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the Gorn in the second to last episode of Strange New Worlds.
Yes.
I feel like part of why we care about Amelia Gornhart as opposed to the hordes of them in the earlier episodes is because they used practical effects.
Yes.
Is that a character's name?
No,
Amelia
it's not.
Gornhart?
No, so that the plot of that episode was a Gorn and a Starfleet officer crash land on a planet and they have to survive. So they're like our enemies. It's like Enemy Mine, basically. You know, that Luke Gossett, Dennis Quaid movie.
Yes. Oh,
same
I
thing.
Know it, yes.
But previously on Strange New Worlds, the Gorn were all CG animated characters. But in this episode, they had it as a kind of a big puppet costume thing. And people went nuts for it. Everybody loved it. I loved it. I fell in love with a Gorn because it was such a rad, physical, real puppet thing. Even though it was still like kind of, you know, puppet costumes could be like, it's a dude in a costume. You knew it was a dude in a costume, but still there was something about it that made it way better.
That made you fall in love.
Yeah.
As you said.
Yeah.
What was most interesting to me about that was Amelia Gornhart. I just wanted to know if that was really the name of the character. Is it? I don't know enough about it. I thought, do the Gorn all have like, is it like George Gornington and like they just use like world figures and just add their name, Edward James Gornos?
Yeah.
By the way, there's this actor that looks a lot like Edward James Olmos, and they use him, I think, when they can't get Edward James Olmos.
Oh, really?
And I call him. Yeah, he came on a thing the other day, and I was watching it by myself, and I go, here's Edward James Olmos. And man, you know when a quip just vanishes into the vacuum? Yeah. I mean, I was like, that was a good one. I'm going to save that. And I just used it now.
Great. That's good.
Mooncubus' comment continues. Side note, I'm still in the Batcave. I decided to try polishing the weird chair, and it turned out to be Secret Jesus inside. He gave me a handful of Starbucks gift cards, winked, and then left. Not sure how he knew the way out.
So wait.
Also,
Secret Jesus was in the chair. So it was a human chair, but with Jesus inside.
Yeah, a Messiah chair. That's an upgrade you can get. You know, also speaking of the CGI, I watched The Rankin and Bass, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer over the holiday.
Yeah.
And it had the DVD we have of it has extras, which I've never watched. And so I watched them, and it was all the animators talking about it. And one of them said, CGI looks real, but it feels fake. And stop motion looks fake, but it feels real.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's exactly it. Also, I didn't know that most of the animation for that was done in Japan.
I didn't either.
Which surprised me. Oh. I don't know why. It was they outsourced it because just like then they wanted to save some money.
Yeah. That gets us to feedback 42, Tiny Mind Explosions. It's a Ghost writes, I've heard there's been sightings near Palm Springs of Jules Verne riding a giant chicken with Dracula. Robert Curtin wrote, can't confirm. So there you go. It's confirmed.
That is a melange of inside jokes.
Which I appreciated, so I felt the need to read them. James Anthony writes, on the honorary doctorate topic, you're aware that you can write them and ask for one, right? No, I wasn't. Hmm. Maybe focus on Michigan University or one with weird fiction authors among their alumni.
Can ChatGPT do it? We're revealing here why I probably shouldn't get a doctorate.
Yes.
I have to write a letter for it? Too much work.
Too much work.
We're going to be covering speaking of ChatGPT, we're going to be covering a little bit of the AI topic more this week. Mm-hmm. On Thursday, we're covering Tale of the Computer That Fought a Dragon by Stanislaw Lem. Mm-hmm. And it felt like a great bridge between fairy tale stuff and the sci-fi month because it's a science fiction story told as a fairy tale.
Yep.
So Hopefully folks will enjoy that. Robert Curtin writes, I will be Roadside Picnic's strongest soldier. Speaking of science fiction, Robert continues, very weird sci-fi story set in Canada, written by Russians and available online. And of course, inspired Stalker, both the games and the wonderful film by Andrei Tarkovsky. It was the first book I ever sourced from a sketchy website and had to read awkward, skewed scans of each page. On a reread, I feel like I can already hear you guys covering the episode. Does that mean I'm seeing time all at once?
Wow.
Or maybe I've just been binging the show too much. Either way, I'm excited for January. Well, you know what? I also downloaded, not from a sketchy website. Oh. I got it from the Internet Archive, but I got Roadside Picnic. Mm-hmm. I've got it on my e-reader.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a read. Thank you for the recommendation. Lots of folks suggested that over the years, so at some point we will be covering it. Promise.
DR writes, the talk of suspicious chairs reminds me of the chair dogs from Dune. They are alive and made to look like big fur-lined chairs.
Did you know about the chair dogs?
I don't remember. Maybe it's not from the first Dune book. I've read that fairly recently, and I don't remember that at all.
But there's a lot of sequels.
There's a lot of sequels, and I've read those like 20, 30 years ago, and I only got Emperor Dune. When the dude turned into a big worm guy and then like lived for 1,000 years, that stuff is so bonkers.
To me, chair dog sounds like an agoraphobic biker gang. You know, they're just like, they just stay at home. They put on their vests and their patches and they're like, yeah. And then they just get on like a Skype chat and, you know, watch Invincible.
Doc Singles writes, for anyone that needed to know, the Slaughterhouse-Five bird call, Poo-Tee-Weet, is almost certainly the Northern Bobwhite. I grew up with this bird song in North Carolina, and I think a better mnemonic device for this call would be Vanna White.
Vanna White?
Vanna White?
Poo-Tee-Weet? I encourage folks to go check out that comment because he included a link to the Northern Bobwhite, and I checked it out, and I am also positive that is where the bird call comes from.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Just clear as a bell when you hear the bird.
Oh, okay.
Sing.
Neat.
So thank you for that, solving that, because Poo-Tee-Weet is a little weird. And, you know, when Sean the reader was over here, he's like, how do you want me to do that? I actually wish I'd known at the time because yeah. I could have played in the video, but yeah. I thought he did a good job.
He did.
It was.
He did a great job.
Nathan Warner writes, I had the eeriest podcast listening experience of my life listening to this episode. I drive for a living at least 6 hours a day behind the wheel, and I am starved for things to listen to.
Mm.
I went back just last week and downloaded some old HP Podcraft episodes, The Yellow Sign, The Yellow Wallpaper, and some Ambrose Bierce stories. I was doing my nightly walk at my local park, and I was finishing up episode 153, which was on Bierce's The Damned Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of that episode, Chad tells a story about Rod Serling during World War II and the horrific event of Mr. Serling watching his friend getting beheaded by a freaking care package out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Gosh, if I said that way back then, I know I said it again on the Twilight Zone or on the, well, I've told that story a lot. Anyway, I finished that episode, saw that this feedback show dropped and started it up. And so here I was walking through the park, listening to the new show. And I hear the exact same story on this episode. Within the span of 10 minutes, from my perspective, it was the same description of Rod Serling's friend dying by decapitation, even though these episodes were years apart. That weirded me right the F out. I actually went back and forth between the two episodes to make sure I hadn't replayed the same show. But nope. I'm an atheist and not easily spooked, but that coincidence gave me the willies. Well, hopefully it's not some kind of The Ring situation where I get beheaded in 7 days.
Oh,
I'll keep you posted and keep an eye out for care packages. Oh, God.
Nathan has not posted. I haven't seen a post from Nathan, so God, I hope he's all right. What I also love about that is that Nathan didn't just think, God, Chad repeats his stories. He got scared by it.
I love that.
He got creeped out. He let it creep him out as opposed to being disappointed in you.
Do you have a problem when you hang out with your, you know, I was hanging out with different folks over the holiday, and I don't know what I've said to them or what I've said on this show.
Yep.
I have no idea.
It's same thing. Absolutely happens. It's really frustrating. I edit myself a lot, and I think, I think Rachel would want me to edit myself further, but but most people, I say things and I go, I think I might have said that already. I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Frederick Jiglin writes, I was literally holding a glass of sake, unknowing the wallop I was about to receive.
Yeah, I did another burn on sake on that show. Well, that's great. I always hope that something like that happens. We have a lot of power here. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say this right now. If you are robbing a bank right now, stop doing that.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure there's got to be at least one person we just caught robbing a bank.
Yeah, and then maybe they'll second guess their choices and not rob that bank. Huh, interesting. Also, I have to confess, I feel like I have to come correct here because I didn't jump to the defense of sake because I actually enjoy drinking sake. I think it tastes delicious and I like it warm and I like it cold. And I didn't say, I let you just do that drive-by and I didn't say a thing.
Yeah.
Like a chump. Well, so, you know what? I'm stepping forward right now.
I think sake's doing all right. Study number 151, Sir Buzz / the Blue Light.
Robert Smith writes, as the father of a son who just turned 18, Sir Buzz felt both prophetic and deeply, deeply terrifying.
Oh my God. I was so dumb when I was 18 years old.
So dumb.
Everybody was, but it's still embarrassing to think about. Falcon Hoof writes, I think the common thread you've missed between these two stories is a protagonist who gains the services of a magical being and then uses them for incredibly mundane ends. In Sir Buzz, the son has a genie at his disposal and then uses his first wish to make a DoorDash order, which he intended to pay for.
Right, yes.
In the Blue Light, the soldier gets the dwarf to kidnap a princess just so that she can clean up his hotel room.
Yeah.
Perhaps I've been spoiled by the convenience of modern life, but I think most people could dream bigger than food delivery and housekeeping service. I don't know. Those things are very seductive,
They're pretty good. Gideon Falcon writes, with the princess being weighed in flowers, it puts me in the mind of many other instances in folklore where a maiden, or more especially princess, is described as beautiful because of how absurdly fragile she is. Like the princess in the pea, any woman who could sleep perfectly fine with a pea under her mattress, or rather under six mattresses, is apparently far too brutish and unrefined to be a real princess. I even recall one story, I forgot if from India or further east, where the princess was described as so dainty she literally couldn't walk on her own without feeling stabbing pain in her inhumanly tiny feet. It's just part of the same age-old patriarchal insecurity that demands that women be not just subservient or dependent, but utterly helpless without a big macho alpha Chad male. What?
Yeah.
Oh, man. To go throw rocks at things for her, even before considering the truly horrific bodily mutilation such beauty standards have pushed women towards in various cultures, it just baffles me that people would see appeal and attractiveness in a trait that just sounds so exhausting to deal with. Yeah.
That all comes out of insecurity, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the correct word.
Yeah.
We actually, you know, you and I have talked about how we were in Little Shop of Horrors in high school together, but we were also in Once Upon a Mattress.
Yeah, that's right.
You were the wizard. You had a big...
I was the wizard.
Big hat and a big wizard beard.
Uh-huh.
And I was the prince, and Peggy Hansky, our director, made me wear pink lamé bloomers. I was like, Peggy, I go to high school, you know? Like, this is funny for you, but I'm going to have to deal with this. But she was like, just go out and own it. You know, she was right. Nobody gave me crap about
it. Nobody cared.
It was a challenge.
No.
Jamie Malika Chatelain writes, I've also tried and failed to get through comparative phylogenetic analyses, uncover the ancient roots of Indo-European folktales.
Oh, wow. I can't believe somebody else did. That's great. Yeah.
One of the authors did an interview on a different podcast that I like. Although I'm still not smart enough to read the paper, it did give me a much better understanding of the concept and methods that the paper is about. I highly recommend you listen to it and maybe more episodes of the podcast if fairy tales are a form of short stories you enjoy.
Hmm.
I don't know if the actual podcast was in the comments. So, add that if
please.
You can, and people can check it out. Speaking of fairy tales, I'd like to recommend that I always thoroughly enjoy reading The Robber Bridegroom, collected by the Brothers Grimm.
Yes.
A girl is betrothed to a rich man who lures her to his home, where she discovers he's the leader of a cannibalistic gang of robbers.
Yes. I'm familiar with that one, and I think we might have even talked about it, but I think it wasn't quite fantastical enough for us. It just felt like it could be a sort of 80s slasher film.
Yeah. It might have come up when we discussed Bluebeard, but yeah, I think I've read that as well. That's a harrowing situation to be in.
Yeah, it's not good. Nuke writes, if it's one thing I've learned from listening to your podcast, it's that you're never supposed to trust a suit of armor. So the concept of a suit of armor at the airport passing out drinks, it's counterintuitive to everything I've learned here, Chad.
Yeah. Well, look, I was just saying I'm surprised that doesn't exist. I'm not saying you should accept those drinks.
The true.
All knights are criminals in the modern era. Study 152, Beauty and the Beast. Once again, our old pal Brendan Gardner chimes in and writes this. Number one, Chris, your singing voice is beautiful and could be the reason Rachel married you. It's an enchanting sound you make.
Wait, hold on. I want to stop right there. What? I've known Brendan a long time, and he's a nice guy and a good friend, but he's never once complimented me. I don't know if on anything, but my singing voice? Is that a joke? Is he trying to make fun of me? But that doesn't seem like Brendan. I don't think he would do that either. So I'm taking this at face value, which is insane to me.
Well, it is an enchanting sound you make. I do have to agree with him. Number two, being turned to stone, that remains conscious, seems a little severe penalty for having a bad personality. Yeah, I did feel bad for those ladies because I don't know. They just kind of suck, but they may change. I guess she does say that you will stop being stone if you do change.
Yeah, she
but
gave
there's
him
not
out.
Much you can do in your life if you're a statue. I mean, I think that's a recipe for resentment, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to get better from that penalty. So yeah, I agree. It's a little extreme, but in the fairy tale universe, man, things are dark. Punishments are severe.
Yep.
And number three, Brenna writes, the orange chicken thing made me laugh. And I think I said that the beast was serving her orange chicken at dinner when she was in the Enchanted Castle. And I think the beast would have great orange chicken.
Ben A. writes, man, now all I want is a Lovecraftian version of Beauty and the Beast, perhaps entitled The Curse of the Beast or Bella and the Horror. The beast lives in a non-Euclidean estate that only appears as strange, unmapped ruins before some hapless visitor stumbles upon it. The cursed object is a book, not a flower. The beast compels the protagonist to send his daughter, or else he is consumed. Bella goes mad at the end, and she hallucinates the beast as a beautiful prince, when in reality he consumes her soul, a la Shay's Sothagua. The story is told in letters from her to her father, except the final act. But the singing enchanted teapot and candlesticks from Disney version are still added. It almost writes itself.
Well, if that's the case, write it.
Yeah, write it.
If that's all you want now, you know what to do.
Just get to work.
I actually think that you'd have a good chance of getting that published in one of the Cthulhu-type anthologies, actually. I think there's an audience for it. Write it. Robbie H. writes, okay, Heather was a brilliant reader for this. I'm positive she's a Disney princess now. Yeah, she did a great job.
She's a Disney princess. What does that make you?
I don't know. I guess I got to get my Pink LeMay shorts back out and be the prince again. Eric Speaker and Digressions writes, not directly related, but praise for Andrew Lehman is always relevant. One of my colleagues in a team-taught humanities course assigned Arthur Machen's The Great God Pan last week.
Oh, wow.
Students didn't know what to do with it, I think. Anyway, in reviewing it myself, I listened to a free audiobook version on YouTube that was deadly dull when there was no dialogue. And then to your final Lovecraft Literary Podcast episode for summing up. The short readings from Andrew blew that audiobook out of the virtual water. Truly a great god among men.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know how I would have thought about Great God Pan in a class.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hard story I think it is a really scary story, but you really have to do some work.
Yeah.
On your side.
Yeah, it's true.
I might have just thought it was stupid at the time. I don't know.
Hippity Hoppity Cthulhu on Your Property writes, love the episode, but wanted to say, finally able to get back to the podcast again. Moved to a new town and started a new job. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Starting over from the beginning of the pod again at my new job. I was finally able to convince my partner to listen to the podcast. I made her a patron and sent her this podcast as a gift for 2 months.
Awesome.
That's great. She listened to The Nutcracker and The Phantom of the Opera. She really loved it. You've got a new fan and patron.
Yay! Yes. Thank you so much for helping us out. You know, we like the way our prices are currently. We don't want to be like these streamers who every 2 months are like, we just found out you owe us $5 more a month, you know?
Yeah.
I just want to keep everything the way it is. But the world did go and get a lot more expensive since we started doing this.
It has.
The only way for us to keep up with that is to keep spreading the cheer. So
please,
if anybody can evangelize this show and get other folks to sign up or gift them a patronage, we certainly appreciate that so that we can keep things how they are.
I re-listened to Nutcracker recently because of the holiday season.
Oh, you did?
Oh yeah, and that's good stuff. That's great shows and a great story. Really like it. And of course, I think we talked about Trapdoor Lover recently with the Phantom of the Opera stuff.
We did, yeah.
So yeah, good episodes.
That gets us to Original Fiction Haunted, which was the story I wrote and read.
Yes.
There were a lot of really positive comments that made me feel great. I would feel really embarrassed to be reading all of them, but I will read a couple. Uh-huh. I'll read one. Alan Ricks wrote, I really missed your original fiction. That made me feel good. I remember when you did One Small Valuable Thing and I wished you made a whole collection. I still wish that. This story would make Aikman proud. Aikman probably would. I don't know what Aikman would think of it, but thank you so much. And I'm going to try and get a collection out this year.
You had me read it early on. I'm just like, I love it. I think it's great. People are going to love it. And I was right. So I'm taking your victory to be my victory because I told you people would like it and they did. So I win.
Yeah. Make it into a negative for me. Just rub my face in it. I told you people would like it, you idiot.
Jason Aresti writes, enjoyed this piece. Humorous and containing a healthy dose and appreciation of the often absurd and inexplicable nature of life, but also touching on the sad and painful ways so many of us self-isolate and suffer alone, trapped by our own insecurities and shame. I look forward to potentially more original fiction in the new year.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to deliver on that. Also, you caught on why I wrote this. It was so the chair dogs will finally go out and get a motorcycle and get out in the world. It's all for the chair dogs. I will say that I quit writing for a while, actually. the last few years because the movie that I made in 2022 was such a bomb. And a lot of it was out of my hands.
Yeah.
But I really internalized it without meaning to. You know how that happens? It's like,
of course,
you know you're doing it and you know it's unreasonable. But I was
feel how you feel.
I told myself, like, you're terrible and just nobody's telling you. And only this year I was like, I got to get back on that horse. So obviously everybody likes to be flattered.
Yeah.
This really meant a lot to me that people wrote in. It takes time to do that, and I really, really appreciate it.
And that gets us to Extra Credit 42, Beauty and the Beast movies. Jim Cannon writes, I think this is one of the best Disney films. My personal favorite is Jungle Book. And all right-thinking people think the same as you about the live-action remakes. I have never seen the Cocteau version, but you have me curious. Was not expecting the Grease ending, to be sure.
That's right. Remember, I was really excited because they just fly away in the end.
Yes.
And I said that was the greatest ending in The Matrix. I forgot they did that in Grease, too.
That's in Grease. That, it's crazy to me how nuts that ending is, and I just accept it.
Well, right.
Because I guess I watched it when I was a young person that, they fly away. You know, what's wrong with that? That's not weird.
You know why I accepted it? Because it's a perfect ending to any movie, just flying off. That's why I liked it in Beauty and the Beast. That's why I like it in The Matrix. And then over the holidays, we rewatched Back to the Future. Guess what they do at the end of that movie?
They fly away.
They fly away. I thought, this happens a lot in movies, actually. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, not quite the same, but they do fly away in the Great Glass Elevator.
Yeah, that's right.
Blades of Glory, you know that ice skate? They have like rocket skates at the end and they fly away together. I thought, I bet there's a list of these somewhere.
And there was.
Did a Google. Yes,
yep.
On Letterboxd. There is a list of movies that's called movies where the protagonist just flies the f*** away at the end. And there's a whole long list. So, you know, somebody else recognized this beautiful trope. As well. I'll link out to that in the show notes.
Gideon Falcon writes, the director asking the audience to practice childlike faith reminds me a lot of the original play of Peter Pan, at least as depicted according to the movie Finding Neverland, so I can't vouch for its accuracy. The director had several seats for the first showing reserved, but all scattered throughout the audience, which were filled with children. When the play started and the children openly enjoyed the humor, it broke the ice for the austere Victorian British adults, allowing them to find their own enjoyment of what they would otherwise scoff at.
Mark Simmons writes, that was fun. I'm racking my brains for examples of a gender-flipped version. Remember, we were talking about that a little.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the closest I can think of are stories where the woman is a beauty at first sight, but a beast under the skin.
Oh, yeah.
When the curse is broken in these kinds of stories, it's because the suitor can accept his sweetheart's true nature, tentacles and all. I'm thinking of movies like Spring from 2014, Low from 2009, and the Hunger TV episode, Weak Woman. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it's hard to find.
Good examples.
Yeah.
It is hard to find.
Jamie Allenson writes, this point reminded me of the program Ugly Betty, which featured a very beautiful America Ferrera as the eponymous Betty being uglified by wearing braces and a pair of slightly unflattering glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's so not ugly by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, nobody really is in movies and TV, but in some respects, when people complain about that, I kind of got to take the side of the producers. They have to get people to watch it, and I just think people like to look at beautiful people, even if they're playing ugly people.
Yeah. But this is people...
Unfortunately.
There are people that have unclassic beauty. You know, people that are kind of weird looking, but are sort of attractive. That they have that quality that makes them special, but they actually, if you just did a drawing of them, you'd be like, ooh, that person's kind of weird looking, but they still are charismatic or attractive or...
But like, I think Steve Buscemi's a really good looking guy. He's odd looking, but he's striking.
You know, the comedian, voice actress Kristen Schaal, they kind of have her playing all these like goofy, weird characters. I think she's really attractive.
I'm so attracted to her. Well, you know, if you're funny, like that's for me, you know. But yeah, I think that it's just a money thing, man. You put money into something, you're like, we got to get somebody good looking for this because the movie will do better. We're going to be back with some more science fiction. We've got the dragon and the computer. And then we've got a time travel story by Alfred Bester called The Men Who Murdered Muhammad, which I found really amusing. So I'm looking forward to that.
And I want to thank all of you guys for contributing to our feedback show, because without you, we wouldn't be doing this and we wouldn't be doing the show. So thank you.
Please stay tuned. For now, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lacking, and you've been listening to Strange Studies of Strange Stories,
exclusively on Patreon.
Strange Studies of Strange Stories.